Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Doug Heinzman. I am the lead strategist for IBM's Lotus division. We're responsible for our workplace portal and collaboration technologies inside of IBM. My last position prior to this one was as a director of technical strategy for all of IBM's software group, and as such was the lead strategist around all of our open source technologies in the company, and was the executive chair of IBM's executive committee on open source that authorized the use of all open source inside of the company, as well as the shipping of any code having to do with open source and participation in any sort of communities in the world. So I'm here today to share with you some of the ideas that we've been working on, to give you some insight into what IBM's agenda is in all of this. Last year we had one IBMer show up to the conference who happens to work for me. This year there are five of us here. If you project out from on that line, you can see we have an increasing interest. But it should be clear. I want to make sure that you've got the opportunity to test me on what our interest is in all of this and where we see this all going. Why, almost out of nowhere, did we show up and dedicate enormous resources to advocate and to assemble community around the open document format specification? All the work we've been doing in our government relations programs around the world, working with governments and large companies around the policy issues involving the open document format. And there's some very important strategic reasons why we're doing that. And we think that there's an extraordinary amount of potential, and we're on the very first steps of a very interesting journey. And we're hoping that this initiative, that the energy in this room and the potential of the open document formats to unleash a new kind of economic to support a new kind of innovation and push us past the paradigms that have dominated this portion of our industry for most of the last 20 years, that there's a lot of potential here, and that if we can focus our efforts, that we can create an awful lot of brand new value and new economic opportunity, as well as new technology opportunities to do interesting and innovative things. This was a we had this little group that does guerrilla marketing tactics, and this was one of the prototypes of Microsoft held this big developers partner meeting conference in Boston, right in our backyard, and we were going to hire a whole bunch of people to walk around in front and hold this great big protest just for fun, but this is actually going to be problematic because this isn't quite mapping the whole screen here. Let me try this one more time. Okay, that's better. So the real theme here is, as we go around and we talk to governments, that the documents are not only do you have legislative reasons that you need to preserve documents for as much as 60 years, you also have historical requirements. There's many geographies that really believe that the documents that they create are part of both the living and the recorded history of their particular country or state or whatever it happens to be. And the idea that their access and use of that information, those documents, can be arbitrated and abstracted by some commercial entity is completely unacceptable. That these are their documents, and they ought to have the right to do with those documents what they see fit, and should not be beholden to the commercial and technology agendas of any vendor in the marketplace. And so this is a question of principle and a question of sovereignty for an awful lot of people. And so that's why it is in government sectors that a lot of the real lifeblood behind the ODF initiative has taken taken root. So we think that you should be able to do anything you want with these documents, and there's actually a whole lot of things that we believe you're going to be able to do with these documents that are well beyond and outside of the current dominant paradigm. And that's really what we want to talk to you about today. So, a whole bunch of speakers have kind of covered off this stuff, you know, where we've come from in terms of the sovereignty issues, the arguments that we've been putting in play in governments around the world about greater choice, freedom of action, cost effectiveness, greater efficiency of exchange of information, greater control over the use of your own documents and intellectual property contained there within, and greater access to innovation, right? That there have been a lot of structural barriers to doing interesting and innovative things in and around this marketplace because of the reality of the market dynamic. And that has precluded many customers having access to both cost-effective technology and innovative new technologies. And so we aim to change all that, and we view open document format as the vehicle to do that. We do believe that we're at a transition point, that ODF can promote organizational productivity and creativity, that we can have, because of the true openness and level playing field around ODF, we've got the ability to afford a much greater flexibility in coordinating interoperability inside of an organization. But the events of the last year, and frankly the last couple of years, have really demonstrated a lot of the challenge that we've got with interoperability and standardization of the way that information is presented. The disaster in New Orleans in the United States was dramatically and negatively impacted by the inability of the first responders to coordinate information, to have basic understanding of what resources were available so that they could be deployed in as efficient a manner as possible. The fact that their information portal that people would go to find out if their loved ones were living or dead, or if they needed, you know, money or shelter that night, or food because they were starving, or water because they're dehydrated, that the only way you could get at it was with a specific version of Microsoft's browser. Because they used a whole bunch of non-standard extensions that other environments, people using Macintoshes or mobile devices or Firefox, weren't able to process. And when you've got all these organizations that need to come together, respond to these kinds of situations, you need to be able to exchange information in a highly interoperable way in order to get the most optimal solution. So this is another motivation that's driving things. We think that it can create value creation. It is not chartered to build a conformant specification to a private company's products. We were the only company that voted against the formation of TC45 at ECMA. And we did so for very principled reasons. And chief among them was that in the first paragraph of the charter, it explicitly said that the output of the group, its chartered objective, was to produce a specification that was 100% conformant to whatever Microsoft was shipping in their commercial product. And we stood up and said, that is no way to run a standards organization. That's not the way that these things work. And we don't want to have any part of that on issues of principle. And so that's the fundamental reason why we decided to vote against it and to not participate in its work that it's doing. ODF is being built in a very open, collaborative sort of way, and it has been ISO certified. So we think it has a lot of potential as a foundation for some new technologies. I don't really need to educate you on some of the timelines. There are some issues of the suitability to innovation of the alternative in the marketplace. And to be quite frank, as we kind of looked at this landscape about 3 years ago or so, and we're trying to imagine this next generation of things that we could do if only documents were open and exchangeable and self-defined in an XML-oriented format, we quite frankly couldn't care which one it was. As long as it was open, that it was done in an open community in a transparent way, and that it was elegant and pragmatic, right? Because if your design point is that my only design point is that I have 100% fidelity with every single document that's ever been written. You happen to design a spec in one way. If your design point is that you want to open up documents and their contents to all kinds of interesting implementations, then you design things in a very different way, in a much more pragmatic way. You reuse a lot of existing standards work and the skills around those standards work. You do things in very simple ways and in ways that are very descriptive and can be accessed by a large number of people. So we kind of looked at the landscape, and ODF was very compelling in terms of meeting that that set of criteria. My colleague Rob Weir spent one of the former sessions going through a detailed analysis of some of the issues around the ECMA XML specification and some of the reasons why it is obviously much larger and, in our view, much less technically elegant and pragmatic as a basis for doing non-traditional things, as a mechanism to preserve the greatest degree of fidelity of existing Microsoft files. It may be a fine specification, but it did not meet the kind of design objectives that IBM, and I suspect many of you, share. So that kind of takes us to what can we do with things. We think that ODF is a mechanism to break the traditional model where the file format has been intimately tied to the application that implements it. And we've seen, you know, many, many historical examples of this. We want to break those two things apart so that they're abstract, and by doing so, promote a new style of programming, and obviously a requirement to choose much better colors for this projector, but that many, many different kinds of applications can interact with the information. The example that, of course, we've got that says the web in the yellow that you can't read is the fact that, you know, the experience we had with the internet and the development of the web and web browsers really created a distinct abstraction from the presentation experience and from the application, the information that was surfaced to that environment. And by breaking those two things apart, the kinds of innovative things that have been possible have been breathtaking. And we're hoping to see the same thing happen in the world where we've got documents now in that yellow box, and we've got all kinds of different applications that can use that information and those documents in all kinds of interesting and flexible ways. We in IBM and in IBM Research have been doing a lot of thinking about this, and as I've been having conversations with many of you and many of your colleagues here at this conference, it's abundantly clear that many of you have been thinking about many similar things, as well as some net new things that we haven't even had on our radar. And that's very, very encouraging. Some of the most fundamental issues that we're hoping to promote and see a lot of activity and energy around are things like programmatic access to the contents of these documents, so that we can map them to namespaces, define document object models around them, and be able to then reuse them in all kinds of different contexts, so that we can do lots of situational programming, bringing together bits and pieces of ways of looking at information. The idea of the fidelity of presentation gives way, in terms of the merit of its weight value, to how useful the contents of the document and the information contained therein can be made and presented in a context specific way to a particular user in a particular context. So we think that there's a lot of important work to be done in integrating ODF technology into various different browser implementations. We think that there's some very interesting potential utilizations for doing real-time collaboration. People that have been using Google's Writely product, and I've been talking to, and actually I've worked in groups of people from different companies where we've been working through proposals and memorandums of understanding, and we're using Writely as a mechanism to co-edit a common document. It's a really interesting collaborative paradigm to, in many situations, to drive to resolution. I run a strategy team, and we're constantly trying to find new and better tools to get expertise and members of my strategy team to have the same visual context in front of them and to edit things in a very real-time sort of way. And we don't just want to use one particular paradigm, the web browser. We want to use many different kinds of paradigms, and we're finding that ODF is a very efficient and pragmatic mechanism to do that. And I'm going to actually show you some demonstrations of some of this this research technology we've been working on. We've also been doing some interesting experiments on doing very granular searching and just using the fact that you've got XML documents to go out and find really interesting embedded references and unstructured information. And there's a lot of potential there of harvesting, you know, the vast amounts of unstructured information and exposing it in ways that create productivity. We think that documents can and need to be more dynamic. We've got some, we're doing work with some interesting runtime models, and I'll talk about some of the runtimes that we think that we've been working with and we think are relevant in this space. We think that they need to be seamlessly integrated into all kinds of existing documents, all sort of existing applications. That the idea that you've got a, you know, in the very simplest world, that someone sends you an email and it has an attachment of a word processing document is kind of silly. But you could also be working inside of an SAP application or inside of some sort of business application, and you may want to manipulate or view a certain piece of information. The fact that you've got to exit out of there into the formal context of a office productivity editor of some sort is kind of old school way of thinking. That there ought to be ways of invoking the context of exposing that information inside of that application in a way that it is much more intimate to the way that that application is functioning, the way that the user actually needs to interact with that information. So there's some SOA kind of integration stuff that we've been playing with. And you know, this whole mashup situational application phenomena for us is an enormously big deal. You know, as we talk to our customers around the world, and we go and we tell them that, listen, what this really means is that you can build very short-lived, very high-value applications in very little time with very little resource, they're really interested. This is a big, big deal when you can do some stuff. You know, I was surfing around and I came across an interesting website that had this application that was specifically tailored for disabled skiers who live in northern Vermont. And it integrated information about snowfall, about how many runs were open. So snowfall stuff came in from the National Weather Service, and the, how many runs and how many lifts were open came in from the ski hill. It was all portrayed on a Google map with the navigation from where you are to how to get to there. And it had some information pulled in from the Department of Transport to tell you if certain routes were you know, busy and not. If I tried to build this application from scratch, let alone, you know, launch the satellites to take the nice pretty pictures of how I get there, this would cost me enormous amounts of money. The fact that someone can build an application and address it to such an incredibly small niche audience and do it economically is a big, big deal. And ODF and this new generation of open documents feeds into that. These are some of the projects that that we've been working on these four different line items. So the department is currently working on art services, policy-based management, lifecycle compliance and auditing. On the personalization line, there's accessibility and learning, persistent relationships, and speech and multimodal context. On the collaboration line, there's live collaboration and document-driven business processes. On the integration and programmability line, there's rich media and graphics, live data and advanced search. A lot of these things are outside of the traditional paradigm of an office productivity suite. And that's really the point here. But all of these things, and a lot of the glue that holds these things together and allows them to be kind of cross-leveraged and packaged together to build new and interesting value propositions, are because of ODF. So, we do believe that there is a requirement out there to for building a toolkit, a way to express the specification, as simple and elegant as it is, to be able to express it as a high-level API so that people can readily use it and access it and manipulate information stored inside of ODF files very easily. There's we believe, a lot of requirement out there for that, and we're actually, we've been having dialogues with other various different players in the industry about the best way to collectively get that piece of work done. And a number of us have been doing the technical specifications on what that that toolkit should look like, and its scope, and some of its structure, and we hope to work together in partnership with the rest of the community to find ways of getting that piece of work done. ODF programmability is kind of an extension of that. So if we've got the API, these things become a lot more programmatical. We do have mechanisms to make ODF documents very programmatical. I'll give you a few examples in a second here. We see ODF as a compound document model. We've developed some mechanisms, and we hope to express a lot of this capability in these public toolkits that will allow ODF constructs to be mapped to DOM and allow them to be integrated into applications in very intimate ways. So these are some of the issues that we're kind of struggling with, and we also have a design goal of enabling that in a number of different runtime environments. We want there to be lots and lots of flexibility that allows people to use this technology in many, many different kinds of structures. So we've been doing some research work around embedding inside of browsers, embedding inside of OpenOffice and its derivatives, as well as being able to extend the Eclipse Rich Client platform and use it as a runtime to be able to manipulate these open document artifacts and be able to use the plugin architecture and the event handling architecture to be able to do some really interesting things in that space. There's a number of different approaches to the kind of and different degrees of simplicity and complexity involved in the various different application programming models out there, from the typical simple web application model to some of the more Ajax and JavaScript mechanisms to establish a state awareness and be able to dynamically load updates, to really a compound document programming model, which is what I'm going to show you a little bit of in a second, of where you can be interacting with a document from any number of different kinds of runtime environments and have a live and synchronized awareness of what the state of that information is, even if you're accessing it from not only different runtime environments, but from different application interfaces. And so that's a very interesting goal, and there's a lot of interesting things we think can be done around there. This is, I won't bore you with, because I don't actually understand this, but this is as an example of some of the code that, of just how simple it is using basic JavaScript scripting technology that a lot of people understand of embedding ODF into HTML documents and exposing them through web browsers. We've done some interesting experiments around Firefox integration, and I'm going to show you in some of these demonstrations a combination of the Firefox integration as well as the integration of into between open documents and other applications, as well as between different modalities, between people using web browsers and people using other kinds of editing environments. So before we go on, now this is where I kind of ran into a pretty big hiccup, because I kind of came here with great enthusiasm about the access to the Wi-Fi network so that I could demonstrate all of this technology for you live, only to discover that the routers have locked down all the ports that I need access to for my VPN to work. And so they've had a bunch of people looking into opening up the ports so that the VPN access is going to work, and they've declared that there's going to be 37 documents that I have to fill out in triplicate, and it's just not going to happen. So I went a bit around about and had one of my colleagues mail me to my private account, which I can get access to, some video files of the demonstrations that I wanted to do for you live, but kind of show the general concept. But it's, unfortunately, it's all I have to work with because the technology is not allowing for this. So let's start with Let's start with this this integration demonstration. So here we've got a browser, and in this browser we've got a number of different object types. We've got, we've got a calendar application. We have an open document editor, spreadsheet editor, and we've actually got a piece of programming that goes as a simple piece of scripting that allows us to go out and parse information. And what we're going to do here is actually enter in some search criteria to go out and search and search a database for calendar items, populate the calendar with all the various different items between a certain date and a certain date, and then take that information and then go and populate the open document file with the information that we're pulling out of the calendar, and then list it according to the column definitions that we established inside of our editor. So this is an embedded ODF editor, and the file, all that information is now sitting inside of an ODF file itself. So we've basically done this DOM mapping, defined the ODF document to a namespace, and we're then just calling up against that namespace and then moving the information between these different applications. It's pretty simple, but the kinds of things that you can do with it are very powerful. This is, it's way too small for you to see, but this is the actual JavaScript that's behind this. So it's just simple, everyday JavaScript that millions and millions of people know how to write, that you could, you know, hack together in a very situational way the ability to do those kinds of simple integration. And then you now have that information inside of an open document file. You could put it in the content manager. You could apply policy to it and conformance filters on it, and do whatever you want it to do as part of managing that as a encapsulated piece of enterprise information. So pretty simple, but pretty powerful. And that's the kind of thing we want to unleash. I mean, we want to standardize the mechanisms to do that. The next thing that I wanted to show you was had to do with collaborative document editing. And as I said before, anyone who's used Google Writely has, you know, kind of got a glimpse into this idea of having a live view of a document that multiple people are working on. And even that is really only giving us the glimpse of this much bigger opportunity of real-time collaboration. And we're still working with, you know, kind of this kludge of a paradigm that we kind of bring to this, and we need to kind of then, you know, use the familiarity that people have with those paradigms, expand it to give them an idea of what's possible in a live collaboration world, and then start to break down that paradigm and allow people to move to the next kind of paradigms. So let me show you an example, and this was, I was really very disappointed that so what I'm going to show you here is something that we call Livebook, which is an IBM research project. We actually use it productively inside of IBM quite a bit. So there's about 5,000 researchers or so that use this every day, and they've started to roll out a pilot to a whole bunch of other parts of IBM, and we're all using it now. But basically what we're doing here is we're going to take an ODF document and load it into, identify it to the Livebook server, and we're going to upload it from our hard disk to a certain team room space on the server. And now this is a document that I can go and edit using an in-browser editor. So we have an in-browser editor that's looking at this document, but it's an ODF document. What we're expressing is HTML, using an HTML editor to be able to go and process it. Now we've gone over to the IBM Productivity Tools, which is the OpenOffice-derived code base that we ship now as part of our workplace offering, and is now also going to be standard part of all of our Lotus Notes clients. And we're going to open up the remote file that we've identified from our browser and bring it up inside of our productivity editor. Right? So this is an OpenOffice productivity editor that is on my hard drive. And you'll see that I'm going to, you know, type the word hello down here into this document, and instantaneously that shows up without having to do a refresh in my web browser somewhere else on the network. Likewise, I can now go and edit stuff on the web browser, and when I hit enter, it actually automatically, without refreshes, shows up in my productivity editor. Different runtime environments working on the same piece of information, right? So this is kind of the Writely environment. Well, this is going to continue for a second here. Let me pause it for a second.
Is it only because it's the same user, or would this be the same experience for multi-user?
This is multi-user, right? So these are different users. So the way that our Livebook server works is much the same way that the Writely technology would work, is that I, as an author or administrator of that team room or of that document, would define certain people as having access to that document. If I was on that list, either identified as an author, an editor, or a user, or a reader, I would have the right to interact with that from whatever modality I happen to have. If I've got, you know, this happens to be an Eclipse-based application, but if I had an OpenOffice application, it's a kind of standalone, or if I had a web browser or some other kind of environment, multi-users from multiple different kinds of clients working on the same document. Now, they may actually have different views of it, right? So I might be working from a handheld device. And because it's a handheld device, I've dynamically reformatted it, and I've chosen different fonts that are more efficient in transmission, and I've taken out certain graphic files that take up too much bandwidth. Or I may be a FedEx or a UPS guy. We're using a very specialized device, and I've taken color depth out of it, or I've taken the information and put it into a form structure. That might be the way I need to look at it, because it formats the information in a way that's very specific to my context. But because it's talking to the same content, I can go and, you know, edit out and add this kind of word, and it will, you know, get put into things. Well, that's a, once again, a simple matter of program, right? That's all.
It's only software.
Yeah, so you, but that's a very excellent question, and you've got to make decisions about, you know, just how, what kind of rules you establish to allow that to happen. So what, you know, I say this is the easy way of doing things. This isn't easy. There's some interesting technology involved in doing this, but if they're, you know, both the same, then you put it in here and it shows up there, it's easy to demonstrate it. But there's no reason to say that it has to be that way, right? You can parse the information out and format it in a completely different structure, in different context. You know, I might have, it could be a spreadsheet, for example, and that spreadsheet is made manifest as, you know, a product list of that shows me inventory, but it's not structured as a spreadsheet because the packer in the factory doesn't want to see a spreadsheet. They want to see it represented inside of a form structure of some sort. And so I go and edit that field. That field may, in fact, be a completely different cell inside the spreadsheet, but it's just mapped that way. So what do I care? The application maps to that piece of the construct. So that's kind of cool. The continuation here of this that's also kind of nifty is the server actually has a normalization engine in it. So here we're actually grabbing a PowerPoint presentation and uploading it to the Livebook server, and in doing so, it automatically instantiates it as an open document format, right? So it becomes an ODP. Automatically, so there's an automatic filter on it which normalizes it, and then I then go and pick up that file off of the server. It's already been automatically converted to ODP, and I can now edit it in my HTML web browser editor, or I can also then go down to the my productivity editor and do the same co-editing thing that I did before. So these are just some of the things that we've been playing around with. So let's just finish up here. So conclusions here. ODF certainly is about the question of principle. You know, they're your documents, and you should be able to do with them what you want, wherever you want, with technology from whatever vendor you want to do business with. That is a statement of principle. And the fact of the matter is, the vast majority of people utilizing ODF in the very near future will be doing so in very traditional ways, from the traditional paradigms that we're all familiar with. But as we saw with the experience of the web, when we moved to a bunch of standards, when we abstracted that user-client experience from the information, unbelievably interesting, innovative things happened. And the value creation potential became very, very broad-based, and the overall value creation became really quite vast. And we're hoping that we can do the same kind of thing. I mentioned the first day of the conference, and well, maybe it was on Tuesday actually. One session I was sitting in, I did a little, you know, kind of as one of the questions I was asking or comments I was making. you know, I really kind of made the call and said, this is wonderful what the openoffice.org organization is doing. And we, you know, we believe that a successful and healthy open office community and open office product in the marketplace is essential and is a wonderfully healthy thing for the overall marketplace. We also believe that there is a tremendous opportunity to build a complementary capability where a group of co-invested shared assets would allow people to change the fundamental underlying economics and to do interesting and innovative things. And that there are various technologies like some of the stuff we have from our research divisions and other people that if we can put some foundation technologies into a pool that anyone can use to do new creative things, that that will be not only very healthy for the industry as a whole and an engine for new value creation and new creativity, but will also greatly enhance the relevance of open office in the marketplace. And so we view these things as very, very complementary activities. And so we're very interested in establishing dialogues with people about, you know, what those requirements would be. What are the fundamental things that really need to get done to try to unleash this innovative potential? Okay, so that's my little spiel. So I've got 10 minutes left. I'd be very happy to have a dialogue and conversation and you know, open up the floor and tell me, am I out of my mind here, or is this, yeah, wow, we should be doing this, or, yeah, sir.
So this is great, but just as a opening question, you mentioned all the changes that IBM Workplace has done on OpenOffice. Are there plans to upstream those changes back to the OpenOffice community?
Yeah, so you're the first person that's ever asked that question. Strangely enough, it's a very good question, and it's a fairly complicated answer that involves a lot of lawyers. Frankly, and so there are a number of structural reasons why it's very difficult for commercial vendors to be directly involved in the Open Office project. And I won't bore you with them, but there are structural reasons. They involve governance and legalities and licensing and a bunch of other things. But that's the reason why there aren't, you know, the big commercial vendors there. That being said, you know, we all have bilateral cooperation, we're all talking to each other and sharing technology. My vision is that this complementary community would in fact be the place where all of those vendors could show up with their hundreds of engineers and their deep pockets to do some of this highly complementary work, that we could invest all of the embedding that we've done for our editors so that it can be run inside of the Eclipse-rich client platform and have access to all of that vast amount of investment and all that plug-in architecture and some of the modularization we've done, that we can expose that. We've got a vehicle to do that. The accessibility framework that we've been working on, we're looking for a mechanism to give that away to anyone that will have it. And so this becomes a vehicle to do that kind of thing as well. So, and there are other commercial companies around the world that have similar assets that, in the interest of you know, really moving the industry and unleashing this value creation potential, are very willing to contribute and donate. And so we're hoping to do that. And we've been talking to our colleagues at Sun for some time about the potential of doing this kind of thing.
So in your mind, the forum that you mentioned, what would be that forum?
Sorry.
Forum for the new innovation?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we have an awful lot of kind of details to work through. But part of what I'm asking here is for input, right? So if we're in the first stages, and I've been having conversations with many people of trying to define what that looks like and what kind of licensing and governance and you know, what kind of liaisons it has with openoffice.org to make sure that, you know, it's as complementary as possible. And the last thing we can afford to do is for everyone to be duplicating each other's work, right? The only real chance we collectively have to unleash this potential is if we really focus and concentrate ourselves, and we do a few things really well, and we concentrate and focus that effort instead of, all running around duplicating all the work that we're all doing. So that is work in progress, and we're very eager for feedback and figuring out how to structure this so that, yes, there are, you know, a bunch of big vendors with resources in the model of a number of other communities out there that invest in the shared asset pool. And yes, it is fully open to anyone, including individuals, to participate in and to get access to those assets and contribute to their evolution. So there are models in the industry that we're looking to harvest and use, but we're very eager to collect input to figure out how to do this in the right way, in a way that's very constructive and can contribute to the overall welfare of the overall community and of this community.
So is one of the concerns is about IP?
Well, let me put it this way. IP is a very delicate question, obviously, in all of this, but it is very much our goal that this, you know, if we could ever build this library of assets, that there be a concerted effort to make sure that group of assets was in fact both protected by an IP shield that would be, you know, sponsored by its investors, and IBM has a pretty big IP shield on its own. But second of all, that the people that would use those assets would have extraordinary freedom of action in the marketplace. And you can, you know, read the code behind what that means. But that certainly is one of the design goals, is to make them truly, you know, open and unencumbered, and we want to go in some really innovative and new directions that are unexplored. Yes?
I'm very interested in the RCP integration.
Yes.
And browser integration. So do you have is it available yet?
Another good question. The question was, there's interest in the rich client platform integration and the browser integration. And I actually learned just the other day that there was that Sun had done a prototype on a Firefox reader, which is very interesting. We can't wait to see what that looks like. I can post with this presentation, first of all, a white paper that describes some of that stuff. I can talk to some of the developers about putting up those JavaScripts that I showed you and a lot of those techniques, either at this site or a pointer to it, and publish them on IBM AlphaWorks, which is a way that we kind of put code out there. And certainly a lot of this technology would be some of the assets that we'd want to donate to some organization that would be able to use them. So the short answer to the question, the long answer to the question, is, you know, we have to figure out internally what, you know, obviously we have an interest in actually building commercial products, and we're still trying to figure out what's valuable and what's not. We're very aware that there are some fundamental things that it is in our collective interest, and certainly in IBM's even parochial interest, to put out there, because it changes the economics, because it enables all these other things to happen. And for those things, we're much less interested in keeping control of them. We're very kind of happy. So we're going through the process internally of kind of listing out all the technologies that we have, deciding which of them fit into that kind of enabling category, and then just, you know, giving them away. So this is work in progress. So I'm very hopeful and even optimistic that we'll be able to put that technology out there so people can start playing with it. But we're working through that right now. Yes, sir.
In order to get many third-party software or many rich client stuff to use ODF, I think you need a common API or something which is the access to the open document. And maybe there is a big need to define its API. Is there any work you had to do in order to build your software, or is it work in progress, or do you have some view on that?
Yeah, oh, right. So the comment was that it's really important to have a rich API expression of the ODF specification. And we agree completely, and that's one of the reasons why this toolkit proposal is so important. It really is creating a reference implementation of the expression of this high-level API so that people don't have to always write to the spec directly, that it would enable, you know, even a proprietary would enable Corella, for example, to be able to adopt ODF very quickly instead of incurring huge amounts of engineering time and skill and money to actually achieve. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. So we agree completely, and that's why we think that this toolkit is so important. The work that I showed you here, we went and we actually wrote some APIs to be able to do that programming. We will have to figure out whether those APIs, we kind of hacked them together in research to make something work, whether they are elegant and well-structured enough to be part of the formation of this toolkit or not. And that's just a technical question that we have to work through. A lot of that work is simple JavaScript programming. Once we've kind of got the basic mapping to the internals of the document itself, then its manipulation and its integration with all those other applications, simple JavaScript, and we're very happy to in fact, we can publish all of that JavaScript for you. It's only a few pages of it, and sure, you can see how we did it. Yes, sir.
Do you see any innovation opportunities for the home users for the consumers? Always, it's obviously an enterprise.
Right. So the question was, do I see any innovation potential for the home user? And the comment was that the examples I gave are very enterprise oriented. And of course, you shouldn't be surprised about that because that's the business that we're in. That being said, we've been watching some of the very interesting work that Google's been doing in the consumer space and their spreadsheet tool and how people are using it. Because when you think about, let's use spreadsheets for an example. When you think about the way that people use spreadsheets, they're really divided into two major groups. There are people that actually use spreadsheets and they do very deep calculations and they've got a whole bunch of embedded logic in them. And then there's frankly the vast majority of people, right, 90% of the use of spreadsheet that is, getting the soccer schedule for the next 3 weeks, right, and, formatting an invitation to my daughter's birthday and all that kind of stuff. I know people that manage their to-do lists inside of spreadsheets. They've got, multi-hundred-dollar product that occupies 100 or 200 meg of hard disk, and they use it to manage the only thing they ever touch it for is to manage their to-do list. Well, some of the simple implementations, like Google's spreadsheet application, where you can start to see the value of doing the soccer schedule kind of stuff, really kind of point the way. So the ability to, a lot of people trying to solve the what's the next calendar look like? What's the multi-layered calendar look like? You combine that with the soccer league that wants to publish its schedule with some feed information coming in because of weather forecasts on whether it be canceled or not. I'm making this stuff up. But you could see that some of that situational application building of wiring these things together using very simple, JavaScript techniques is very applicable in all kinds of absolutely consumer-oriented ways, right down to the soccer mom. So, but that's part of this innovation we're hoping gets unleashed by concentrating this focus in this area. Now, I don't suspect we'll be doing a lot of soccer scheduling stuff, but we're hoping that there are tons of people that if it's easy to do, and there's a high-level API to use, and you can use simple JavaScript techniques to do it, that a lot of people will do it. Yeah?
A long time ago, there was a discussion about, we will work with the documents through applications. So it's application-centered. You hold the app and you open the document. And for a while, like 10 years ago, there was a Cairo discussing the document-centric usage. Basically, you start with a document, and document calls all the application that requires to execute the content. That kind of fits well into that model.
Yeah. I actually have battle scars on, if anyone remembers OpenDoc, right? Years ago, the work we did with Apple and the idea of a document as a container for application function and all that kind of stuff. And there's all kinds of historical reasons why that wasn't necessarily as successful as we were really hoping it would be. Part of that was just frankly the technology that we had access to. Part of that was market conditions, part of it. The idea is actually very powerful. And as with many things, we're hoping that we've actually reached that level of technology that the internet itself and the extraordinarily low cost of mashing things up, the Google Earth phenomena, or Google Maps phenomena, all these kinds of things are a net new context that allows the power of that model to actually manifest itself. So yes, I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned, a lot of we're kind of going in some of those same directions. We hope to have learned from the failures and to actually make this time, you know, work out. But I think there's a tremendous amount of potential there. That's a very good question. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, the comment was, as a matter of clarification, about commercial vendors directly participating in OpenOffice for some of the structural reasons that I outlined. And my colleague from Google is quite right that there are certain other kinds of models. You know, Google itself is using a service expression across the internet, which obviates some of the licensing considerations, and so they've got a different way of manifesting the code than, you know, traditional commercial software vendors, and that there's also the Linux distributors that once again are in a different set of, have a different kind of market condition that allow them to do that. You're quite right, I was specifically referring to, you know, the IBMs and the Oracles and the Corels and, you know, the people that have different kinds of businesses models, that there are structural impediments towards them manifesting their business model using those assets. So you're quite right that there are a certain set of conditions that do allow for that to happen. My point was that doesn't apply to at least my company and a number of other large vendors in the world. But thank you for the clarification. Yes, sir. Yes.
Then what about security issue? I mean, if it's inside a firewall, it would be no problem. Mm-hmm. But if I sat at a home and another user at work, would this happen over a secure connection or how?
Yeah, so there's a few. So the question was, what about security? If I'm editing all these things in real time, you know, how do you deal with security? By the way, security is not the only problem. Mm-hmm. There is also the issue of synchronization and reconciliation, mm-hmm. right? I mean, in my model, where I've got one person, you know, using stuff in a, you know, pulling stuff out of a common repository, a content management system of some sort, and editing it using a web browser. Obviously, they're connected to it and doing that in live, real time. I might actually have a cache of that so I can go remote on it. And certainly, if I was using OpenOffice as a runtime environment or Eclipse as a runtime environment, I could be sitting on a plane on my laptop and working with that. And the next time I get connected, which is the way that our Hanover and workplace technology actually works, it actually goes and synchronizes what I've done out of my database with the content repository, and yes. I've got to deal with those. Mm-hmm. But those are computer science problems that, you know, we've been working on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are ways to attack those problems. For the security issue, you know, they're certainly inside the firewall, life is relatively simple. Depending on the document, you may want to define a different kind of policy, right? In much the same way that, you know, when you interact with your bank or with your doctor, you know, there may be, you know, certain requirements to invoke, you know, secure HTTP connections or various different mechanisms, but that would be that would be part of your policy on when you're dealing with this document. You need to put this biometric in to get access to it, or this palm print, or use this kind of secure connection, or you can't use it unless you're inside of the firewall and piped in through a VPN. But fine, define those policies. There's lots and lots of technology that will support the enforcement of those policies. But that's a separate question from the programmability of the file format.
Well, you would want to implement it.
No, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Michael.
We talked about it. So one part I think many people are concerned about here and need to be concerned about, this is still an OpenOffice.org conference, not an ODF conference.
Absolutely.
No, it's not crazy, not yet.
Okay.
So what my colleague here said is about the main focus of this conference and about many people working on this stuff is the basic OpenOffice.org product, not especially ODF. Many people are doing great things about localizing stuff in 50 languages into countries. Emerging countries will never see what you've in the next 15 years. They will never be online all the time. They don't need that stuff. What they need is still the basic, on the disk, Office application. And I think a concern is, and we all have to take care, to be very concerned about that, is that we have engagement in developing the basic product, which is OpenOffice.org, which is not ODF or Firefox extension or stuff like that. I think we all have to have that concern, and that's one of the points from Zahida, that we need investment of big players into the vanilla OpenOffice.org build itself. We shouldn't forget that, otherwise there's the digital divide is not between only the people, but between the file format and the application. And the people here at this conference are very concerned about OpenOffice.org as well.
Yeah, so, I can't repeat all that comment, but the your point is very, very well taken. And we want to be very conscientious about positioning this work as complementary and as magnifying the relevance and importance of OpenOffice in the marketplace. Right? The more open documents that there are out there, and the more flexible and creative ways that people can use them, the more important OpenOffice becomes.
Completely agree. Right?
And
that's great stuff.
If I can answer that.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of I think what you see as well as the whole body is on this conference. I have seen a lot of data. So it's kind of where, but the point is that the problem is ODF, yeah, and we're actually promoting OpenOffice.
I apologize, I didn't hear all of that, so. Okay. but thank you, it's a very good point. And as I said, we're very conscientious, and we do not want to, you know, suck any energy out of this community. What we want to do is bring a whole bunch of new energy and funding to it in a way that, you know, surrounds it with some new value propositions that magnify the importance and relevance of OpenOffice in the marketplace. And that's certainly the way that we will talk about it to the press and to analysts and to everyone. Okay, any last questions? Thank you very much for your time and attention.